From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a lot happening here in our nation's capital today. President Trump pushing back on the Democrats over the crisis at the southern border.
Democrats are solely responsible for the humanitarian crisis because they've refused every single effort to shut off the magnets of child smuggling.
The president made those comments this morning at a meeting of the Faith and Freedom Coalition here in D.C. Mercedes Slapp, assistant to the president, joins me later with more on the border. Speaking of faith, a hearing yesterday on Capitol Hill underscored just how great the present threat to religious freedom is in this country. Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, chairman of the Republican Study Committee, is here on the deceptively named Do No Harm Act, which is designed to really kill the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. He testified yesterday on that measure. He joins us in just a moment. Also, Ambassador Sam Brownback joins me to discuss the State Department's 2018 annual report on international religious freedom. Which countries have gotten better and which have gotten worse? We'll also talk about the upcoming international meeting that will be hosted at the State Department designed to advance religious freedom internationally. And James O'Keefe, founder of Project Veritas, joins me about the ongoing efforts to silence those who are exposing big tech's efforts to tilt the political playing field to the left. He'll fill us in on the latest leaked document from Google that incredibly labels Dennis Prager and Ben Shapiro as Nazis. Both men are Jewish. Before we jump into our first topic, quick reminder. As you know, if you're a frequent listener to Washington Watch, the left is revealing their true colors as they seek to quarantine the expression of religious faith within the four walls of a church, or worse yet, just within your mind, where you have the freedom to believe, but not the freedom to act on those beliefs. That, my friend, is not freedom. And incredibly, they have opened the door to government-sanctioned infanticide in America as well, pushing for abortion on demand even up to the day of birth. It's clear. Our freedoms are at stake and innocent lives hang in the balance. But I can assure you, FRC will not stop fighting to uphold your religious liberties and save unborn babies. But we need your help. We need you to partner with us. Our fiscal year ends June 30th. Like right around the corner. And we must finish this year strong to sustain the momentum that we have to advance faith, family, and freedom. So right now we're challenging our listeners to help us match a $25,000 challenge match, doubling your gift dollar for dollar. If you'd like to partner with us and be a part of what is happening, well, give us a call right now. Got folks standing by to take your call, 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Or go to TonyPerkins.com. Okay, the House Committee on Education and Labor heard testimony yesterday on the deceptively named Do No Harm Act. It is a proposed measure to limit the application of the landmark Religious Freedom Restoration legislation passed back in the early 90s, passed overwhelmingly. Unanimously in the House and 97-3 in the Senate. Now, the Do No Harm Act proposes to limit the application of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Critics of the measure warned Tuesday that tampering with the law could hurt religious minorities who need its protections the most. In questions to Matthew Sharp, senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, who was speaking out against the bill, ranking member and GOP Congresswoman Virginia Fox of North Carolina sought to outline the negative effects of the measure if it were enacted into law. Here's a short clip of Virginia Fox yesterday in her exchange with Matthew Sharp.
As in previous years, our report exposes a chilling array of abuses committed by oppressive regimes.
That's a wrong clip. Fox, let's play the Fox clip one.
Disagreement is not discrimination. Mr. Sharp, the absence of RFRA, the free exercise clause of the First Amendment, would remain in effect, thankfully. Why is it important, nonetheless, to keep RFRA on the books in its current form?
Thank you. And I think we need to remember what RFRA does specifically relates to that free exercise clause. That the court's decision in Employment Vision v. Smith rolled back that strong protection for religious liberty. And it left this gap of protection. And so Congress unanimously, bipartisanly came together and said, we want to restore that proper understanding and respect for religion, insert that balancing test and that compelling interest test once again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will say again, also, RFRA is not about denying health care to women. RFRA is about protecting the First Amendment and our right to the free exercise of religion.
Joining me now is Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson. He represents the 4th District of the Bayou State. He also is the chairman of the Republican Study Committee, and he serves on the Judiciary Committee. As I mentioned, he testified yesterday against this measure. Congressman Johnson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's always a great pleasure.
The majority in the House now, the Democratic Party, pushing forward, directly assaulting religious freedom. What is behind this push?
I just want to say this very clearly, and I want your listeners to let this settle in. The Democrats are clearly pursuing an agenda right now to roll back this longstanding belief that we've had in this country in the protection for religious freedom. And they're doing this in their zeal to just sort of chase this radical leftist vision for the country that does not comport with our history and our heritage and who we are as a people. They want to just run roughshod over our first freedom, which is religious liberty, which from the founders' era until today has been widely regarded in bipartisan fashion to be the most essential literal first freedom that we have. First one listed in the Bill of Rights. There's a reason for that, because it's essential to the right to believe, Tony, as you and I talk about all the time, the right to act upon that belief is essential to who we are as Americans, but more fundamentally than that, who we are as human beings. And so the Democrats are bringing these bills now, trying to roll back these protections, and we have to fight that vigorously at every step of the way.
You know, it might be good to step back for just a moment for those that, I mean, they've probably heard of RFRA, but maybe are not familiar with the origins of it, which you brought out yesterday in the hearing. You know, going back to a 1990 court decision, Employment Division versus Smith, in which the court upheld the government in a case involving two Native Americans that were fired for testing positive for the drug peyote. And the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was passed because this was a part of their religious expression. The passage of that, as you pointed out yesterday, did not say everybody agreed with it, but they understood, whether they agreed with it or not, it was fundamental to their exercise of their religious beliefs.
Well, that's exactly right. So that decision came out in 1990, the Supreme Court. It kind of sent shockwaves around the country, you remember, back at that time. I mean, on both sides of the aisle, because people were alarmed. They thought, oh, my goodness, here's the Supreme Court ruling against the sincerely held religious beliefs of these two Native Americans. Now, look, there were more than 60 national religious and civil liberties organizations at that time, I mean, from across the philosophical political spectrum, who came on board in favor of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It was 1993 that the legislation was proposed. Now, obviously, I mean, some of our groups in the conservative movement were, in fact, all the groups that you and I are associated with were huge supporters and endorsers of RFRA. That didn't mean that they personally approved of the Native Americans' use of peyote, right? It was about, not about our personal views, it's about this idea that you have to protect their religious freedom, even of small minority groups. And the supporters of RFRA back then understood, look, one day it might be our religious beliefs and practices that would be deemed unpopular or face government scorn or restriction. And that's where we find ourselves today. The very reason that RFRA was proposed and passed, and by the way, Senator Ted Kennedy, the lion of the Senate at the time, was the lead champion of the Senate side for this legislation. The liberals and conservatives supported this because they knew we had to jealously guard and protect religious freedom for the essential freedom that it is. And so here we are today. We've flipped it. All that RFRA does, Tony, is it sets up a balancing test. That's what we try to explain in this hearing. All it says is it doesn't guarantee a win for religious expression or religious belief. It just says if the government is going to infringe upon your beliefs, they can't do that. They can't impose a substantial burden on the exercise of your belief unless they have a compelling government interest to do that and that it's accomplished in the least restrictive means. It just sets up a balance so the court can decide it. And by the way, as I pointed out, the government usually wins these cases. It's less than 20% of the cases does the religious claimant win. So there's no big threat to the government or to the rule of law. This is about jealously guarding our first freedom.
But Congressman Johnson, what would happen without RFRA, given the fact that only less than a fifth of those cases prevail using RFRA as a defense? What would happen without it?
Well, that's a great question. And we pointed out that's what the Democrats here are after, to be very frank. Their inaptly named Do No Harm Act would do great harm to religious freedom. I mean, first of all, on its face, what this bill is trying to do is make RFRA inapplicable to a number of federal laws, anything involving abortion or, the LGBT issues or marriage. Let me give you an example. So RFRA was integral following the passage of Obamacare, right? Everybody remembers the contraceptive right. mandate, and Hobby Lobby went to the court, ultimately wound up at the Supreme Court. They successfully fought the mandate because they showed they had a sincerely held religious belief. A closely held company, the Green family, they've always been Bible-believing Christians, and they did not believe that they could provide contraceptions and abortion services in their health care. The Supreme Court upheld it, in part because of RFRA. They said, this is their sincerely held belief, the government can't trample upon them. If we didn't have RFRA, the government could compel individuals, it could have compelled Hobby Lobby or the Little Sisters of the Poor, any groups, religious organizations or individuals to provide coverage for contraceptives and even abortion services in contravention of their sincerely held religious beliefs. So these are high stakes. It would change the very fabric of our country, and it would eviscerate this freedom that the founders put first. Again, they put it first in the Bill of Rights for a reason.
So really, in many ways, RFRA, as we saw encroaching attacks on the First Amendment from the courts, it's kind of a firewall around the free exercise of religion. Without it, religious exercise, for the free exercise thereof, is completely vulnerable to liberal courts and the swaying opinion of the day.
It is. And, we have to protect it from the prevailing opinion of the day. When we were in school, they used to teach us what is popular isn't always right, and what is right isn't always popular. We're in a postmodern society, effectively in a post-Christian culture, as we have to acknowledge. And so today, it just so happens that, while the peyote use of a couple of Native Americans back in 1990 was controversial, today what's controversial is belief in kind of the orthodox tenets of Christianity, the tenets of the faith that have been around for a couple thousand years. Now, that's the controversial stuff. So there's an agenda, a radical leftist agenda, this rise of socialism and everything else. It's godless in its origin. And the adherents of that would love to run roughshod over people of faith. And this doesn't just protect Christians, of course, Tony. It's right. every faith. Everybody. That's kind of the point. Minority faiths have the same protection. But that's who we are as Americans, and that's why we believe in this so deeply.
Congressman, we're out of time, but let me quickly ask you, what would you like for our listeners to do on this?
Well, I'll tell you, this piece of legislation, the so-called Do No Harm Act, which will do great harm, has got a lot of steam behind it. My friend Joe Kennedy III is the main sponsor in the House. They have a companion bill in the Senate. They got, I think, over 150 co-sponsors on this thing. So it's a very serious threat, likely to come to the House floor soon. So we need everybody to call their members of Congress and let them know they are not in favor of the so-called Do No Harm Act because they believe in religious freedom for everyone.
All right. We'll certainly do that. Congressman Mike Johnson, thanks so much for joining us today. All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, is here next. Don't go away.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Got folks standing by to take your call. As I mentioned earlier, if you'd like to be a part of what is happening here at the Family Research Council, and partner with us, you can give them a call. They're standing by to take your call, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. You can partner with us and make sure Washington Watch stays on the air. Okay, the U.S. State Department's annual Religious Freedom Report has warned of a chilling array of abuses against people of faith worldwide. Countries singled out for criticism in the report include China, Iran, and Burma. The Religious Liberty Report is issued each year by the State Department's Office of International Religious Freedom, overseen by Ambassador Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback. Now, launching the report, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told reporters that 2018 was far from perfect and that the U.S. would work to hold countries with poor track records on religious liberty to account. Here's what he had to say.
As in previous years, our report exposes a chilling array of abuses committed by oppressive regimes, violent extremist groups, and individual citizens. For all those that run roughshod over religious freedom, I'll say this. The United States is watching, and you will be held to account. History will not be silent about these abuses, but only if voices of liberty like ours record it.
And joining me now is one of those voices of liberty, and that is the U.S. Department of State's Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, our good friend Sam Brownback. Ambassador, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Good to join you.
Well, good to talk with you. Let me ask you this. In your view, how does the State Department's annual Religious Freedom Report this year compare to last? Are things getting better, worse, or where do we stand?
I think we've got some notable improvements in a few places. I think we've got a bigger spotlight put on China, what's taking place there. And I think the world is starting to take notice that the United States is serious about this. And let me just give you one example of a place. Burundi, there was 21 Seventh-day Adventists that were arrested on a Friday. And then the government seemed to start thinking, well, I don't know, we may get in trouble about this. And by Tuesday, they were out of jail. Well, they were still had gotten caught and they were in jail. But it was like, look, we just don't want to be nailed in the global media about this. And so I think you're seeing us have a positive impact by this attention we're giving to the topic.
I would agree in my U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom role, which works separate from but in conjunction with what you do. You're a member of our commission, a non-voting member, but the State Department's report, different from our report, our report focusing strictly on the religious freedom issue. One difference in your report, or the State Department's report, I should say, from that of the USERF was Uzbekistan. We recommended that they continue to be a country of particular concern, although we did note that they were trending in a positive direction and were hopeful that they might come off the list. State Department taking them off the list this year.
We did. And by the way, I want to congratulate you on your new chairmanship on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. That's a fabulous role. And I'm delighted particularly a person of your stature and faith would take that job because it's really important that we have people that are really into this topic and aggressive about it, willing to do these leadership roles. Yeah, we take a little different view than the commission on it because we've been working closely with the Uzbeks. We've been working with them on several topics. They let 13,000 political and religious prisoners out of jail. They started opening up a few churches, not very many, but a few. And we felt like, look, we think we can really help bring them along. They're still on our special watch list. They're not off the category altogether. But we're hopeful, and so far our discussions have been really pretty good with Uzbekistan.
I would say we've seen positive developments there, and I do think this administration putting a focus on religious freedom is drawing the attention of leaders around the world. One area, though, where things do not look good, and in fact seem to be getting worse, and that is China. And, of course, you address that in the report.
Yes. We do, and we put a special section out on Xinjiang, where the Chinese government has really put in a police state with cameras and artificial intelligence and facial identification markers that really is extraordinarily chilling and really the future of oppression, where you get these high-tech systems in that freeze you out of the economy and out of participating in the society, so you don't put people in jail. But effectively, they can't participate. They can't buy and sell. They can't work in the economy or the culture. And this is something that's just been deeply, deeply troubling to me because I think it's wrong what the Chinese are doing. A, B, I think it's the future of oppression, and I don't want to see it spread outside of China.
Well, and also reports of forcible organ harvesting in China from prisoners of conscience. I mean, what is happening there is just, it's beyond atrocious.
It is. Now, those we have not been able to verify yet, those reports, but they keep coming out. Now, there was a kind of a semi-official tribunal out of Great Britain that found that there had been organ harvesting taking place in China. So, you know, it's getting more and more mounting evidence coming forward in that particular area that's, as you say, it's just ghastly to even think about that you would take political prisoners, religious advocates in a particular faith and do organ harvesting. Ugh.
Well, in an immoral climate, anything is anything's possible. We're out of time, but I'm going to get you back on to talk about this later. But upcoming middle of July will be the second international gathering of leaders to talk about the advancement of religious freedom. Excited about that?
115 countries invited. Over 900 people have registered to attend. We're about to close registration because we're just out of space, but a lot of interest, and I think we're really going to move the ball forward there.
Another example of America's leadership on this important topic, yourself, the Secretary of State, the Vice President, the President. Ambassador, thanks so much for joining us. Out of time, but we're going to get you back on to talk more about the upcoming ministerial.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tony. God bless you guys.
All right, Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback. That's going to be a great ministerial coming up. Okay, when we come back, James O'Keefe joins us on the latest with Google pushing back. That's next.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they're born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive. Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this, Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you, as I said at the top of the program, we are coming up to the end of our fiscal year, June 30th. And we've got to finish the year strong, and we're somewhat in a deficit right now. And your support, your partnership will ensure that we go into this next year strong. We're able to continue to advance faith, family, and freedom, not only here on Washington Watch, which is heard on about 350 stations across the country, enabling Christians and other concerned citizens to engage with their government. And we get some great – by the way, we get some great feedback from listeners, and we'd love to hear from you. I haven't given out the email and sometime, but it's Tony at TonyPerkins.com. Love to hear from you. We've gotten some really remarkable stories of people, how they first listened to Washington Watch and how they've become avid listeners. We've heard people who have run for office. We've heard from people who have taken a stand in their community, their schools, and that's encouraging, quite frankly. And so if you've got a story to tell, I want to hear it. So you can email me at Tony at TonyPerkins.com, and some of these we may even share on radio. But anyway, I've got folks standing by to take your call right now. If you'd like to partner with us, we have a $25,000 match that's out there, so that anything you give at present, up to $25,000, will be matched. That means if you give $20, it becomes $40. If you give $50, it becomes $100. You get it. Anyway, give us a call, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008, and you can partner with us as we come to the end of our fiscal year. Okay, I just got word that James O'Keefe is not going to be able to join us. Something came up, and he's not going to be with us. We had this conversation yesterday with Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. This is the latest undercover video that was released by Project Veritas, which features a senior Google executive suggesting that Google is working to prevent the next Trump, and this is a quote, the next Trump situation, referring to the 2016 presidential election in which Trump won. Now, the undercover interview suggests tinkering, training is the word they use, training the algorithms so that the outcome would be different. Now, the video was up to about 1 million views when Google pulled it down. Now, that's what's amazing to me. I mean, I hope you see what's happening with these big tech companies. You catch them being biased against conservatives. You expose it, and of course, it just leads to more. They take down his videos. It was also interesting that this was not just a video. There were some documents that were leaked by another whistleblower. And in these documents, there was an email with from a Google employee that was describing what they could do to try to limit the exposure that some of these conservatives were getting. They made reference to Ben Shapiro about what he all the exposure he's getting, Dennis Prager, and they referred to them in the email as Nazis, blowing dog whistles. Now, I know both of them. I know Dennis Prager, extremely nice guy. I really like Dennis. He's got his own radio program. Ben Shapiro, I know him. He's been to some of our events. They're both Jewish. And for this individual at Google to label them as Nazis, incredible. Absolutely incredible. This is what we're up against. We have the big tech companies doing everything they can. And we've been seeing evidence since the beginning of the year, not so much in the public realm, but just privately. Some of the things that I've been seeing happen suggested to me that there is a collaborative effort, collaboration, kind of like the Russian type. But among the big tech companies working together, collusion, I should say, the collusion, working together to try to choke off the voice of conservatives going into the 2020 election. I mean, think about it. How did Trump win? How have conservatives leveled the playing field with big media? Well, they really leveraged the social media. That was a pretty free and accessible platform for some time, but that's changed. And the left has realized, whoa, wait a minute. People really gravitate to these conservative ideas. We've got to somehow silence them, and that's what's happening. That's why Washington Watch, these networks that we're on, the American Family Radio, Bot Radio Network, all these independent stations we're on, that's why it's so important. Because really, the last bastion of talk, conservative Christian talk, is radio. I mean, right now we've got our websites, but eventually they're coming for them too. All right, when we come back, the president today pushing back on the Democrats refusing to provide the funding and tools necessary to address the humanitarian crisis on the border. Assistant to the President, Mercedes Slapp, is here next on Washington Watch. Don't go away. A lot more to come.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. Again, folks, standing by to take your call if you'd like to partner with us. 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you want to send me a note, tony@tonyperkins.com. All right, earlier today at the annual Faith and Freedom Coalition's Road to Majority Conference here in Washington, D.C., President Trump said that all of his achievements for people of faith could vanish if the quote-unquote wrong person wins the presidency next year. So true. So true. Besides citing his own record of appointing conservative judges, ending federally funded research on fetal tissue, and defending religious conscience in the workplace, the president explained that the House Democrats are, quote, solely responsible for the humanitarian crisis on the southern border. President Trump said Democrats are using the crisis as a show to cry foul, but they are not doing anything about it. Here's a portion of what he had to say. Let's play the Trump 4, please.
If the Democrats have any shred of moral decency on this issue, they must charge forward and change our laws. They have to end all child smuggling. We have laws. It would end all of this horrible child smuggling. How do we have thousands upon thousands of children? We have them because the law incentivizes criminals to bring children up.
Joining me now to talk more about the importance of the southern border and the president's push on Democrats to respond to this humanitarian crisis is Mercedes Slapp, assistant to the president and senior advisor for strategic communications. Mercedes, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I like the fact that the president is pushing back as the Democrats refusing to truly address the crisis at the border, not giving the funds, trying to tie their hands with policy writers in the supplemental appropriations. What's the way forward here for the president?
Well, first, I find it appalling that the Democrats and Senator Schumer did this today, where they took the image of the tragedy that happened where the father and daughter were crossing the river and they drowned. And he literally took that image and put it up on the Senate floor. And then you've had several other individuals saying it's the president's fault for these deaths. And I find that to just be shameful, because these Democrats for months have said that this border crisis was a manufactured crisis. That and that is an incredible issue. just alone, the president 2 months ago sent up the request for the supplemental to deal with this humanitarian crisis on the border. And the House Democrats and Nancy Pelosi did absolutely nothing. And now they're trying to solve this and push forward some supplemental funds to deal with what's happening at the border, just only in terms of providing relief for Department of Homeland Security and Department of Health and Human Services. And so this is the challenge that we're facing, is that the Democrats now are saying, oh, my goodness, we need to do something, while the president for a very long time has said, we need to stop the smugglers. We need to stop the coyotes. They are using these children as pawns. It's created a magnet because our immigration laws are so weak. And the ones who are benefiting from our broken immigration laws are the smugglers and the coyotes and the drug cartels. And so that's why the president has said, okay, we can move forward on the supplemental and on the Senate bill, but it's not going to be good enough. We need to close the legal loopholes. We have to be a country where laws are enforced and we allow for legal immigration, not what we are seeing, which is chaos at the border.
Well, and as the administration pointed out in their statement of administrative policy on the response to the supplemental appropriations, they made clear that while the Democrats are trying to now kind of do window dressing, provide some funds, as you say, it's limited, but the policy riders that are attached to this, if the president goes along with it, could actually make the situation at the border even worse.
Oh, absolutely. The House bill in itself is just a tool to try to limit the information that ICE needs, for example, or try to make sure that they limit our Homeland Security, our Border Patrol agents, from getting their job done. And it's one of the reasons why, as we know, the Democrats have taken it too far. On the Senate side, there is a bipartisan bill. While not perfect, it at least is it's acceptable. It's in a better position. So then the idea is that the president spoke with Nancy Pelosi. He spoke with the vice president. I was there when they had the conversation of telling the vice president, I need you to work with the Senate to see if we can get this bill in the Senate done and negotiated, and we get to move forward, because we know that the federal funding ends this weekend. And what we have seen is not only our Border Patrol agents overwhelmed and at a breaking point, but the fact that we're seeing so many of our facilities where they're at over capacity, and they just don't have the resources that they need to take care of these vulnerable families who are coming through the border.
I hesitate to ask you this, but I think I have to. What will it take for the Democratic majority in the House to sit down and honestly work through a solution here? What are they trying to accomplish?
Well, I think that the Democrats have made it very clear that their philosophy is one of open borders. There's no question that they've been that's been their goal. Their philosophy is let all these people in. There's no stopping the flow. But with it, as we know, has created a huge surge in the number of illegals who have been apprehended at the border. Just last month alone, we saw a spike to up to 144,000 individuals who were apprehended. That's problematic. It's why the president, because of Congress's inaction, said, we're going to move forward and put tariffs on Mexico. And when he spoke that made that statement, and I know a lot of Republicans were like, we can't do tariffs, there's no way. The Mexican government, several of the officials, their ambassador, flew over to the United States, quickly met with Vice President Pence at the time and several of our officials, and they came up with a plan, which was that of expanding the migration mitigation protocol. They had it as a pilot program. It's expanded across the border. They ended up saying, okay, we're going to put over 6,000 National Guard and federal law enforcement at the border. And what we are seeing, and it was actually reported in the New York Times, is that the smugglers are scared. They're basically saying, look, it's too risky to take an illegal family. family from Guatemala or individuals from Honduras and bring them across the Mexican border. So it is having an impact. I think we're going to see that as the days and weeks go by. And as I've spoken with DHS officials, they've made it very clear to me that they said the summertime is critical. We've got to turn the tide because this is going to continue to be unstoppable. I mean, you can reach up to 1 million illegal aliens coming across the border by the end of the year.
Yeah, I played a clip of Jay Johnson, former Homeland Security official from the Obama administration, where he said when 1,000 were coming across the border and being apprehended, that was a crisis. But when you're up to 4,000, he said, I don't know how they're doing it. So even those in the Obama administration acknowledge that there is a problem. Mercedes, one final question for you. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. But as, going back to the president's comments about the children, we know that, in fact, a couple of pilot programs have used DNA field testing that has shown that the vast majority of these fraudulent families, these children are not related to the adults. They're being used to get across the border and to kind of get to the front of the line and get set free. This is putting children at risk.
Well, and it gets even worse because all your statements are accurate. The last part of this is that then the child is sent back to the country and recycled. In essence, they come up with another single adult male to cross the border. So these are smuggling rings that have been set up. They receive money for this, and at the end of the day, it's the children who suffer under these conditions in these taking this dangerous journey. I mean, we just saw four individuals. I think it was a toddler, and I think an infant and two adults who died in Texas in the desert crossing the border. I mean, these are the tragedies, and these tragedies could have been avoided if only the Democrats would come to the table to close these legal loopholes, to make effective changes so that it's not just unaccompanied minors coming in or family units coming in or fraudulent cases of families coming in. And we do this in a way where we find a legal mechanism to help to process these individuals.
Right.
There is no way we cannot sustain what's happening at the border.
Right. Mercedes Slapp, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. An important issue that we're going to continue to track and hopefully create enough pressure to get something done.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, Mercedes Slapp, assistant to the president and senior advisor for strategic communications. I was actually at the White House earlier today discussing, among other issues, this issue of immigration and the crisis at the border. It is a crisis. I have not been there yet. I've had a couple of invitations. I am going to go at some point. It's just trying to schedule it to get down there. But I've talked to several people who have been there. I've talked to several officials within Homeland Security and within the administration that are working on the issue. And we have been, as the president said, we've incentivized people to as Mercedes was saying, use – it's basically a rent-a-kid, bring these kids. And these are very, very dangerous conditions under normal circumstances. It's, you know, trying to cross the desert in the summer. And this is being created because we won't resolve the problem. We've created this environment that people are wanting to get to this country illegally. Now, the administration, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I was a part of some of the working groups on this, has put forward a legitimate and I think an improved legal immigration system that would work for the country. Look, I'm glad that people want to come to America. And it's interesting that more people want to come here now under the policies of this president because the country is doing well. But without borders, it doesn't – I mean, a country without borders, a country without the rule of law will not long sustain the type of economic growth, political stability that we presently have. You have no borders, you have no rule of law, and you begin to see the meltdown. I don't know. People ask me all the time, is this intentional by the left? Is this a conspiracy? Are they trying to do this? Are they trying to destroy the country? Hey, there are probably some. I don't know. I just think they're just blinded to reality. I don't know. I can't explain. I can't think like a liberal. So I can't really tell you what's motivating them. But I can tell you the outcome of what they're doing would be destructive for the country. And so I think, you know, we've got to continue to press this issue. But we also were talking about the humanitarian side. And by the way, there are a lot of discussions in the White House in trying to mitigate this crisis that's been created by the refusal of Congress to work with the administration in a long-term holistic solution. So, I mean, you've got actually North American Home Mission Board, their kind of disaster relief arm of the Southern Baptists offering to help. The problem is just being able to set up and interact with the federal government. They're trying to go through some of those hoops, other entities wanting to help. And this is certainly something to pray about. There are ministries, there are churches on the borders that are doing stuff. But the basic thing we got to do is we got to fix the law. We got to secure the borders. We got to fix the law so that our legal immigration system works and we have an administration that has the tools and the resources to uphold the current law. And that we do have borders. Borders are essential to a country. I mean, absolutely essential. And I would just say this, for those Christians who say, well, you know, we're supposed to love the stranger. Yes, absolutely. When we're talking about giving justice to the stranger, what that is referring to is that those that are in the country should not in any form or fashion, legally in the country, by the way, should not in any form or fashion be treated differently when it comes to justice. And that is so true. But to deny the law, break the law to come in, that doesn't – you can't break the law then claim protection from the law. And it also, for those who want to cite that scripture, you should go back and look at it because it also requires that those coming to the country live by the customs and the laws of that in that particular case of Israel. So they have an obligation to abide by the laws and customs. So they have to, in other words, assimilate in. You got to do it legally. We are so generous. I tell you what, you go to some of these other countries, they don't let people in. They don't let them become citizens. We're the most generous country in the world. So don't listen to what the media and the liberals are saying about America not being, you know, a friendly country. This is a crisis, and people are dying as a result, and it needs to be fixed. So much to do, and we will do everything we can, and I hope you will as well. As I say, our republic is not going to survive if we all play the role of spectators. We have to be participants in this grand opportunity we've been given. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.